'Tis the length of the journey itself that diminishes the impact of the beauty. The man at 2 a.m. seemed deceptively compact and quiet. The latter aspect had more to do with the time of day than anything else. The Saturday morning market showed no signs of restriction on the availability of anything, so it seemed. There are three markets, from large to small, within the confines of the city centre area, plus the usual range of shops selling all Sunday. In addition, there is no shortage of customers in this seemingly prosperous trading town. Another example of a simple theory that coastal towns always seem to be more prosperous. Certainly this town, the man had a far busier feel to it than even the last. I did little on a Sunday, but for buying a suit. Time will tell as to its qualities, certainly as to my suit buying skills. A pleasant enough place to do little with, its multitude of soft drink vendors along its shady riverbank, with a peaceful, tranquil atmosphere. A day trip out to the nearby Marble Mountains, with its many shrines and its spectacular views of the coast, including China Beach. It looks good. But it is the quality of the carvings which blend in so naturally with the various cave structures and formations. A more interesting trip further south to Hoi An, it was only worth Hoi An, revealed a far more historical city. Of particular note was an old house some 400 years old, combining aspects of Chinese, Japanese, and Vietnamese architecture. The place radiates history, and is still occupied by the descendants of the original owners. The rest of the town contains many other fine buildings, well preserved, and the overall atmosphere is most pleasant, despite the large number of tourist restaurants which seem to be growing up. We even have pizzas on the menu. Tuesday night, watched the Ireland-Norway World Cup soccer game in the hotel lobby until about 2 o'clock. Along with a dozen or so football crazy locals who are able to regurgitate the results tables, including goals for and against. I was assured that Ireland was through after the game, even though the four teams in the group finished on level points. Out of Da Nang, in the process paying some 3 times the normal bus fare, possibly as a result of one overzealous bureaucrat waking up and asking me to wait minutes. Confusing it is. Remembering that Vietnamese are not as passive as others, I insisted on buying a ticket and boarding what was, in fact, a fast-filling bus. That's just been attacked by a wasp. Much ado subsequently as the sun rose about where the rucksack should go inside the bus. Maybe I should take a little pride in winning for both sides the argument, this argument, and keeping the bag inside and not on the mainly exposed, partly covered roof. Now, as for the scenery on that long 26 hours of crushed existence, did you know that a leg of lamb could be put into a can of sardines? It does in the local transport sets. We passed through wide, expansive plains, mainly covered with rice, which seemed to become poorer in leaps and bounds. Until by nightfall, all was poorer. The cafes, the houses, the roads, and the people. Beggars, yes, but the three destitute, stooped beggars, old women, stooped to a 90-degree angle, their faces twisted upwards, contorted cruelly by age and sun, to a pitiful sight. I, on the spot, customary glance, nodded the head, the shake of the head, that is. But then I was moved by the actions of 2 young girls travelling in the bus, who gave up quickly the food that they had just bought as snacks for the trip. It was just the sheer poverty, an unfavourable memory which I hope will remain for a long time. 3 months later, recording this, certainly it is as vivid visually as ever. Our only river crossing, by the boat river crossing, was in the former northern town, where a crude barge of ancient origins was towed by an equally or even older paint-free thing across a river which is set in just one of those wonderful scene splendors, then it is too easy to become blasé about, too complacent. The distance surrounds was a mountain range, while in the vicinity, 15 to 20 kilometers, flat rice fields, through which a half-kilometer wide river or so wound its gentle way. The sound of peace was all around. The neighboring beach scenes were by and large non-events. It seems that the monsoon season does enough damage to them. Night, whilst quick and falling, was slow and lifting. As we battled on with few stops. An early evening stop at a local cafe saw me get much friendly, hospitable help from the locals in trying to get some food. The plate of rice, plus all, was very cheap, and certainly good value, but the quality was of poor. Oh, and yes, around many bridges you could see the remains of man and not nature's activities from 20 years ago. It seemed that extensive craters were to be found around every bridge. There was no way a man could have been doing it. Eventually, in the early hours of the morning, we entered Hanoi to be deposited for some peculiar reason in an obscure location in the southeastern part of the city, not near any bus station. Even the locals seemed confused, but in a more passive manner, surprisingly, or maybe they're not. Are actually left more passive. Nobody seemed to complain. They just stopped, or walking away, or hiring vehicles to get them into town. Like myself. Hanoi, the streets were wide enough for very few vehicles, and the non-space consuming bicycles and mopeds which are everywhere. Tree lined with mature trees that other cities always seem to be just growing. They never can get old in those other cities, but here they are old, in many cases will touch across the road. Old buildings, but not run down. Just old. Neat coat of paint look a lot better. A mark of vibrancy, yes, but not in the same league as Ho Chi Minh. And their food stores, missing by comparison, were all places from Da Nang southwards. Just to get a bite in the street was difficult. What was an offer seemed okay, more, but was of poorish quality and quantity. The tree-lined streets and many parks, particularly the central lake area. I hope those aspects are kept in as development progresses. Ah well, so we skipped a day, stayed longer here, went walking in a southerly direction or so through wide, long, pleasant tree-lined streets. They all seem to be tree-lined, or nearly all of them. In the old quarter, to the north of the centre, we double back. All the streets are named after the trades which used to predominate, and still do, such as shoes, silk, whatever. The buildings, all showing their age. I think that they were far more solidly built. Profound statement number 72. At sunset, the streets take on a more cosmopolitan show, with teenagers, moped propelled, lining up as a living crowd before one hotel cafe, which fronts onto the street in order to buy ice cream. Not the expensive Coney Island stuff, but very cheap, simple ice cream, on a stick, no paper, no wrapping, no advertisements. The crowd was probably between 17 and 18, was continually being renewed by new arrivals. It was raining slightly the following morning, just before the breaking dawn, as the regular TV lobby crew crowded in anticipation around the box for the Romanian-Argentinian game. Nearly a 24-hour day for some people. The train trip out of Hanoi was very comfortable, even with a hard seat. And a gentle pace through many rice fields, in which the paddock was already being planted, in a busy, bobbing way. A landscape painter would have reveled in the harmonious setting as the people toiled, The bobbing conical hat, the sea of murky water, and waving strips of green, all through the endless flat fields, endlessly flat, till the town of High Form, or a city more likely, has a total population in excess of 1 million. Wandering through the streets in the direction of the harbour, there were many natural smiles and a few invites from various groups of people, sitting at various street-based mobile cafes, and the inevitable stare of curiosity. The rustboat, for the 3-hour trip, looked very sound, functioning, but the interior seating predictably crowded. So to the roof, despite the heat of the day, just to get the occasional burning, skin-burning phase. Down the long, busy river, seaward bound, or to give it the proper name, the Gulf of Tonkin and the Bay of Hailong. Soon the surroundings were transformed miraculously. Tall pillars of rock between 15 and 100 meters high, reaching, stretching out of the sea, very straight-sided. Very many different sizes, from small 50 meter circumference to very large. Thousands of these things everywhere, to the left, to the right, on it to the port, to the starboard, to the stern. Most impressive, and giving an unreal type feeling. Slowly, we arrived at our destination, a surprisingly busy place of both narrow and wide streets, probably reflecting the old and the new, all with a very definite commercial flair, and yet quite remote from the mainstream of development. Is this anything to do with the theory of coastal development? Because even this small place was bustling. Few tourists seem to stop here. There is little in the way of boats for hire. I say few tourists stop here from the response I got in the local market and trying to buy some fruit. That was an experience. After dinner, I gave English lessons for entertainment, theirs and mine. A short ferry trip across to Ba Chai, which is reportedly, and is in fact, on the development track. This is the place where tourists hire the boats, not the other place. Many tourists seem to be, I won't say many tourists, but quite a number of tourists seem to be around. There are oodles of boats for hire, and so we enter town on foot. And it seems that nearly every building has been converted into a hotel, a mini hotel, say between 8 and 10 rooms, on the ground floor of which the family will eke out accommodation somehow. The food is fine. This part of the world were quite expensive, some $5 for a locally caught crab. Those are the government supported prices. Crabs apparently export, probably to Japan. Bound for Hanoi by bus, and for a quick look around the Ho Chi Minh Mausoleum, which is a peculiarity in itself. March in single file from one building to the mausoleum itself, escorted by white uniformed guards. They have that false sense of formality about them. Unreal. Up the stairs into a large room, but itself no more than 8 meters by 8, or maybe 10 by 10. In the recessed part of the central floor area, around which we walk on three sides, was the glass sarcophagus with its frail, aged-looking former president. Of more peculiarity was the four guards at the respective corners, frozen to the point of being like waxworks. Perhaps they were waxworks. The whole thing is kind of unreal and odd, particularly the scattering of tourists and the many, many local people. I think it is open for about 4 hours a day. Whilst there, we marched in single file for about half a kilometer from the starting point to the mausoleum. Before exiting the mausoleum for a brief look around the great leader's original house, which had escaped bombing. A different experience was stopping by at a food stall in the early evening for a chat in sign language about everything under the sun. just to sit back and be well looked after. With zeal, the local whiskey poured into small teacups, neat and very palatable. The bottle had no label. All communication was by sign language, or by obscure words such as zeal. My parting feelings for me now. I would have liked to have spent more time in the Mekong Delta area, but then that would only have been possible if I would have got more information on both routes. Furthermore, I would like to have gone off to the north, certainly that part of the country bordering on the Chinese border, which is by all accounts very beautiful and only slowly opening up to tourists. The existence of tourist prices for accommodation is perhaps not too bad, although the standard of accommodation is variable, and perhaps the most variable that I have had experience in Southeast Asia. The prices for transport are a bit farcical, considering the what one's getting for transport. The scenery is pleasant, with many, many mountains. The country seems nearly covered with them, and extensive flat rice fields, mainly in the south. Then not forgetting, of course, the hill areas of the land. Agriculture in ordinary does seem significant and poor. Maybe I'll read it wrong, but in the south in particular, there's an impression of unleashed power in progress in action. The literacy level is noteworthy, at over 80% on average. And then there is all the development, the construction, the mini hotels, the mini examples of capitalism taking place. All the major names, notably the Japanese, the Koreans, and the French, amongst the Europeans, seem to be already firmly established. The flight back out was not as good as the flight in. Perhaps I became a bit more blasé about the quality. I think I'm using the word blasé a bit too much. Back to Thailand for a couple of days in Bangkok before heading onwards and outwards, northwestwards, to Myanmar. Boy, that's the place that was originally called Burma. Myanmar, first day. Well, if each country has its own individuality, and this place was where the rule was originally made. Refer to the guidebook for a bit of background. Our 4:30 p.m. flight with Bangladesh Airlines was fine, more or less, but 2 hours late on arrival at Bangkok. The interior of the plane was old and compact as any local bus. The wall pattern frayed and the aircon system leaked water. Were we flying by wire or what? Then we landed in a city with an intensity for electricity consumption. There was really the fewest lights I've ever seen arriving in the capital city. Immigration, many smiling faces. Foreign exchange conversion, many smiling faces. Customs decoration and baggage clearance, many smiling faces. Not just my smiling face, but the smiling faces of the locals. They all seemed relatively happy. No hassle, no setups of intimidation, just smiling faces. The news on TV in English is long and detailed, but it includes an item on the foreign minister visiting Malaysia. He is due at the ASEAN summit in Bangkok next month. Progress in opening up the country, albeit slowly. The taxi was new. It even still had a smell of newness to it. And this, in a taxi? The streets quiet at 8 p.m. as if it was 3-4 a.m. in a smaller city. Wide road on the way into town, some 6 lanes of traffic could be carried. I never saw it busy. But the signs were there for Toshiba, Kodak, and the other trailblazers. After finding a hotel for the night, I then found the Golden Duck restaurant with its subdued non-neon lighting. They seemed perplexed that I wanted food as well, but seemed to relax greatly when they discovered that a beer would keep me happy. Mandalay strong ale. Then a present. The present being their word. A plate of dried fish. Very small fish. Very dry. fine. And then the World Cup game, some 18 hours late. What about pro refs? I wondered, watching them, watching the box, how long it would take them to fall into the peculiar hairstyles I've seen when the cameraman panned the grab. Traditional dress, men, the longi, like the sarong, is worn by nearly all of them, except for the army and a few others. There is a relaxed rush to the city centre. There is a little bit of a rush, in fact. I think it is changing rapidly. I think further in the month that I was there, that it actually got busier from the beginning of the month to the end of the month. The streets were busy, as are the markets. The stores are less crowded than in other Asian centres, but there is still a wide variety of goods to choose from. White goods seem purely functional, mainly fridges. Brown goods certainly sell. Fabric is there, but not in great variety. Tourist goods, souvenirs, etc. Yes, but unusual items not really. They seem the stifling of the imagination of what has been created. Went to see the big Square Dagon Pagoda, where the rain reduced everything to a complete farce. With my newfound umbrella, I eventually bade a hasty retreat to the market for a bit of lunch. Mild curry fish, yes, very unusual. Walking to the restaurant, consternation. Go to the bowl of the food, soften the food, point out what you want, and everything becomes relaxed. And certainly the price of charge didn't make me feel bad being ripped off either. Dined at the palace that evening. The bowl of soup was getting kind of expensive. It seems to have tripled in price since the guidebook was written a year ago. I spent the rest of the time just walking around the city of Rangoon, avoiding the tourist sites and having a couple of cold beers in the bar of the New Strand Hotel, where the setting is relaxed but has a somewhat artificial, plasticky, colonial feel to it. Yes, in fact, very artificial despite the two-piece band. A view of the river would have even been made a place more civilized, but the harbour was in the way. Sheds, the rest. The train trip upcountry to Mandalay should have been more pleasant, with its spacious, reclining seats. But the regular, very regular, push-pull effect of the train chugged along made the trip most uncomfortable. Little in Mandalay seems to extend over two stories in height, but the 5 to 6 story buildings are going up to be sure. It is a character all of its own, probably starting with its old palace, a square shape with each side 2 kilometers long, and a 70-meter wide moat, which has been renovated at present, at the time of writing. The idea being to line the sides with small rocks so they have the bottom dredged. A rumour that they could be looking for jewels, though most of the work had been done by resident army, supplemented by prisoners. They were the first to grab the uniformity of their clothes, not just for the army, and then the steady clank-clank of the chains that provided the answer as I was walking in amongst them. Some of the other travellers I met thought it inhuman. But then, what a way to repay society, particularly with the risk. Not the risk, but the opportunity of discovering a good supply of jewels. Above the palace to the northeast lies the hill of Mandalay, covered in pagodas, like grass. A long, barefoot walk, yes, one of the minor problems, and a great view of the flat plains and of the deceptively quiet Irrawaddy River. Of course, there was also the Katadol Pagoda with its 730 slabs of marble containing the Tripitaka, which would normally occupy 16,000 pages of text, as per guidebook. Each is housed in its own small temple. Next door is the Sundaman Pagoda, with another few hundred slabs of marble engraved text. Apparently, it was the thing to do at some point in time was find a bit of marble and engrave it. A day trip upriver to the mainly deserted city of Mingan was another treat in itself. At first, it is the trip by boat that is the high point, with a myriad of typical riverside activities, from washing and laundering to playing and sand collecting, and movement of that same sand in boats that are nearly swamped by the current, I guess it's only the start of the rainy season. Along the side of the river lines the Lingon Pagoda, with its 70 meter long walls and 50 meter high brickwork, split by an earthquake, which resulted in no further work being done. The close proximity is a miniaturized version of what it would have looked like had they completed. The view back downriver, again impressive, flat plains, distant mountains. No pollution, I think. Quiet. Heading southwards towards the town of Sagang revealed yet more pagodas. The particular one is like a Buddhist version of Day of the Serpent. The main attraction in Sagang is the Kangmado, with its 46 meter high, perfect hemisphere shaped like a woman's breast and only 350 years old, surrounded of course by some 812 pillars, each 1.5 meters high. Getting there was more than half the fun. Firstly, on top of the bus, cooler, but far rougher than the interior. Even the locals agreed with this propane aspect. And then, of course, it was looking for opium woods. Not too many around, and a long and pleasant process of buying one set. 1.5 hours for one purchase and a lot of fun. I think they eventually were glad to see the back of me. And food here, in this neck of the woods, is okay to good. One very good vegetarian restaurant, the Min Marine, and the Indian Everest, and also the Muslim, a couple of Muslim restaurants. Then there was a pastry shop, where the tourist gets surrounded by plates of pastries, at least 6 to 7 different types, with 4 pastries on each plate or so, and then you pay for the missing ones. The locals only seem to be fortunate in ordering what they actually want, but for the tourists, no problem. I think we need more. You also get the ice cream. Cheap, cool, and pleasant. None luxury here. Very refreshing. The market itself is fun, but the produce is of far more repetitious nature. And whilst there are many people, their quantities are small and just okay, really. I, the tourist, am visual entertainment to them, particularly when it comes to bargaining. And sign language comes out again. Keep laughing, let's say. Keep laughing. And then there was a really pleasant character by the name of Mustache and his daughter, inviting tourists to their practice sessions, rehearsal sessions in fact, for a travelling roadshow. In the front room of a house, the 5-piece band and 4 girls energetically performed. The routine combining movements of grace, slow movement, interspersed with periods of high energy and literally the throwing of the body to the ground as part of the final movement. A slightly painful process maybe, but always done with a smile. The humour, the local humour as per Mustache, he claims to be a local comedian, represents a combination of visual and slapstick with a minimal verbal dialogue. In other Asian countries, there have always been beggars, and even in Vietnam, nature's victims are supplemented by man's efforts. As an aside, as I write, this is what is called a restaurant and is adorned by pictures of various attractive women, including what I think is and is in fact an actual poster for the movie Pretty Woman, all the titles in English. And beer glasses come with drip mats as civilized, on top of course to keep the flies out, for Anchor Beer, and believe it or not, yes, Anchor Beer, they get these wonderful feats, fastest church ever built was in Australia in 1913 according to this drip mat, one day 120 people, and they are still there. The woman and child is still the most difficult to handle here, and I find myself contributing. It is a general softness of the people, whether it is the offer of a present, a plate of fried fish as earlier mentioned, or fried vegetables as here in Monwa. A final item of note is a traditional longri worn by both men and women. Those of the men are of a more earthly colouring, tied differently by gathering the two sides of the tube at the waist and pulling together, compared with the wraparound approach of the women, which is the same as in Bali. As you would expect, a few of the younger men have taken to celibate, and the beast occasionally, after 1 week. In this part of the world, I saw a woman in tight-fitting jeans. So much for the so-called theories. Foreign influence. Onwards to Moniwa from Mandalay, even though I already mentioned it. An early start, yet again. Arriving at the station 1.5 hours ahead of time at 4 o'clock in the morning to buy a ticket. Even the station master was involved in this exercise. He was indeed most helpful in identifying a peculiar wooden cubicle tucked away in the middle of nowhere, where tickets were sold. He gave me one, and in the early morning darkness, he and I, with eye in tow, found the train full with sleeping passengers. It seemed to be advisable to get there the night before. So what to do? Well, the guard van was the best place to be for the 6-hour journey. At first, there was only the pleasant, a part of the English-speaking guard, and then Matthew appeared. Well, I faced it. She was with the travelling luggage, separated from us by a prison-type bar system, the width of the train, and the mere 6 inches height. That is the notice of her face, I saw 6 inches of her face. And that was her, a limited version. The last and the old quickly started. Simple stuff, good fun, good humour, which helped to make the 6-hour journey go a bit faster. Crossing the river Ayarawadi, and then past the Kwamwado Pagoda again, that's the one of perfect chemistry. Flat countryside, scattered agricultural efforts. Oh yes, it's all looked after and tilled, but with no intensity in comparison with other places. The field layout is varied and unstructured, despite the flatness. It's more like individually designed pieces of jigsaw than anything representing an organized agricultural system. I did pass one group of farmers, one of whom with two white buffalo bowing the field, the local colour of all the buffalo that saw seemed. He fell over as the train passed, probably drowning on a rock beneath him. And if, as if embarrassed, that his feet stamped the ground as he lay on the bank, and he laughed, as if to ensure that all his audience in the train knew that he was having fun. No problem, no annoyance. Now, if ever there was an argument that the knowledge of English got less out of town, then this was it. It just about evaporated upon arrival, back to sign language and smiles and hopes. The first hotel rejected me and sent me to a newer, more tourist-oriented place. A little more English, of course. The whole place feels very safe. Be careful with last words. But I would be disappointed. Out to the famous pagoda of Tanbodai, with its 580,000 or so images of the Buddha. A large, nearly square building houses most of them, surrounded by many towers, the sides of which are laden with more Buddhas. The amount and level of carving required is something else. This is not machine manufactured. It's something else. Even if they are repetitious in design, and the hand positions do in fact vary very little. The place was filling up and the town shut down because of the full moon due that night. That's like having a 1 weekend once a month. As with the trip up there, there's an overall air of being away from it all. It was like those places where the train stopped at on the way, some quiet little village, or other stop. No stillness, broken occasionally by the odd sound of passing traffic. I mean, of the A vehicle, not anything like traffic. And so, to walk around on a shut day, and see the signs for videos and show, or wonder. I should have stopped maybe for a video. The evening's peaceful and restful, though to a friend. The morning, before 7, punctuated by loud booming noise. A $5 transistor and a $0 megaphone turned to maximum, I think. And so tomorrow I get to manage to get off the beaten track and maybe see a little part of the country, different from the beaten track of tourists. Up country, a typical early morning start in a very organized, arranged manner, with a tricycle driver who turns up on time, to the minute, very unusual, and takes me to the alleged bus stop. There is already a woman waiting there with her various baskets of goods and produce, at what, during the day, you would take for being a street corner. It was still kind of dark. After waiting a short while, she's off, in a tricycle. Aha, something's afoot, so we follow. I think I had overpaid my tricycle driver because he was still waiting to make sure that I could get on the bus that I was meant to be. Benefit of overpaying, no doubt. We now wait on the roadside, on the road out of town, and soon a truck arrives, half full. In return for an extortionate sum, I sit in the cab with the driver, and some 3 hours later, of which two were driving time, we arrive at U. That was about 8 o'clock. The trip is punctuated by many stops for many people with much goods and produce along the way. As dawn was breaking, an increasing number of people were roadside standing in various directions waiting for transport. The fields, ever flat and interspersed with tall, oddly shaped trees of the coconut variety, and low trees and shrubs. The layout at times very organized and at others chaotic. The vegetation itself is equally varied, from lush green to scrub, with a very fine sand structure. As for the people, the driver did not speak, but at least he pointed me in the right direction at you. It struck me as a very ragged place, but with an imposing clock tower dominating the building line, quite out of line itself with the rough lined, currently dusty streets. Down a narrow alley, unlikely from a mugging alley by all appearances, to the alleged jetty. Alleged bus stop, now the alleged jetty. Even the stopping point on the opposite side of the river had a better jetty. And into a boat, a short walk with the other locals, to a small stopping point with a few houses, stalls. I really didn't know where I was going, I was just following the crowd. A patient wait as we filled every space upon the vehicle. There were 18 of us on the roof and about 15 to 20 inside the vehicle, with a few props to fill the gaps. And off we were along dusty road. Some 24 hours later, the bruises are quite pronounced still. The trip wasn't actually 24 hours, but it was the sheer aching of it all. After a while, we had a short stop, and then the road worsened. It became awful by any standards. On the crowded top, as we were bounced from side to side, dodging overhanging branches were torn. We had a 2 hour stop or so for major repairs. I think it was the clutch that was giving problems. We seemed to change gears better later. And so, at about 2 p.m, our 4 hour journey ended. And we fell out. My bones were still falling into place a few hours later. I think that the accommodation I found was the only place with an English sounding name, that Waylar Rest House. The manager, physician person, said, "Take a seat," and then he made a phone call, as in money was. After a while, who's rushing me, start filling in a form with all my details, a form which then had to be photocopied several times, and which I later had to pay for the photocopy service as well. One of the more peculiar questions was to identify the vehicle and its registration number. I think I would be giving too much information to some government department. Anyway, the registration numbers are kind of difficult to remember. I played dumb. Well, I was willingly provided with a trishaw to take me for a bite to eat, and later for a trip around a few not too impressive pagodas. Albeit that they were in fact the best buildings in town. Returning to the rest house, I ventured out on foot to the now repetitive question of where I go. I was being watched. A few seconds later, I am out on the street and heading into a local nearby cafe, which has no electricity. There was many frequent power failures in town. With a tricycle driver, yes, he's still writing down all the details as to what I am doing, where I go, and who I talk to. Then we were subsequently joined by the manager. I asked about travel north, and he said no problem. And subsequently, the manager left, while the Taisho driver continued to drink my beer and eat my food. But why not try and bribe the local? He left, and half an hour later, returning, and he told me about the many difficulties and dangers. In the meantime, two girls of about 18-19, who we had run into earlier, turned up at the guest house with some fried pancakes filled with various vegetables. Really beautiful. A little bit of local hospitality. So far, after 4 hours in town, I had not been alone for even 1 minute. I asked the manager to help translate in the conversation with the girls who are on the way on to university, a higher school. I asked him to do the translation before he volunteered, because I felt everything has been controlled. I will stay for another night. I prefer vagueness. After a good night's sleep, I was out the door at 7. After a few minutes of reception, to give them a chance, of course, to keep an eye on me. But nobody was there to watch me. I was not sneaking out, but why not make a break for freedom? Got to a local cafe just around the corner for a tasty breakfast of Chinese cakes and a sweet, sweet coffee and something else of a very milky texture and sweet as well. The free Chinese tea even made a welcome change. And, hey, pray presto, here comes the manager on his bike. Where was I? Where did I go? By this stage, my enthusiasm for northward travel was becoming diminished slightly. I said that after going to the market, I would get a bus ticket. He offered to get me one. Into a cafe, and, hey presto again, a staff member appears. I am very well looked after in this outpost. One of the high points of these 3 days has been the pure tranquility of the scenery. There is little noise to punctuate anything, and the people, shy, reticent, perhaps, only because I feel because of the language barrier, because when that is removed, there is a genuineness and a sincerity which I have not encountered before. I managed to watch the news bulletin on my second night there. It seemed to be mainly local news. But for 15 minutes that I had interest in, one item after the next, the pictures of the military, members of the military, speaking, doing, presenting. Every news item had an army involvement. The newsreader was serious in the extreme, all the time reading from a handheld script, no teleprompter, on matching smiles. Wait, what happened to the real local smiles? Is it banned on television? What did totally overwhelm me was the generosity and kindness from the two girls that we had met. Besides the food they also brought a present on my last night, thereby stumping me completely. Bring presents to this part of the world. Even something small goes down great, like the teacher I presented to the manager, just to say thank you. My early morning departure was painful in the extreme again, not as bad as before, crammed into a tiny space for 3 hours towards Mandalay, from where we quickly dispatched, well, I quickly departed for the hill town, cooler climate of Mayu. A winding road through dampish air and cloudy skies. At least it was in slightly less cramped conditions. I would stress the word slightly. They even had signs encouraging nature conservation. In English, that is. Unusual for what is one of the world's poorest countries. The town itself, mainly, was more of a big village, spread out over near flat land. It is noticeable that the English is more spoken here. The trip itself was really a non-event because of the absence of any real views on the road upwards. Brief panoramic views of mountains fading away to flat land. Mainly, fairly flattish for a hill town and spread out in a rambling sort of way, other than far the smallest centre with its distinctive clock tower, called the Purcell Tower. Is this really a British legacy? For in each town there is a very prominent position, good condition, well maintained, and working order, generally, a clock tower. There seems to be many well-spoken English touts from various shops. These touts give some 30-35% of each sale, reportedly. They are a breed of their own, but their appearance of good friendship and a statement come to my shop. It's all done so nicely, but differently people can be avoided unless you feel like supporting their income. More opium weights, of course, in this little town. Ah, yes, a bit more up country. This is a lemon.